Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and today we're bringing you a story from our friend Kim Whitecamp. Sometimes through trial and error, we learn things as children that will lay the foundations of who we become as adults. And in Kim's story, you'll see her learn lessons about making stuff and selling it, and about integrity while you do it. Kim was always scolded when she was young for talking too much, and you'll see a little of that, too, but we happen to think her passion and gift of gab has led to some pretty good storytelling. Here's Kim Whitecamp with a story called Potholders.
My dad grew up on a tobacco farm. And when his father passed away, he sold that farm and he bought a little chocolate box-sized house that my mom had always dreamt of, and he bought an ARCO station. The thing is that my dad was always hardworking, honest, and giving. And that's not a bad thing, but it can sometimes ripple out in a way that may not be the most profitable. When he bought that ARCO station, people knew that my dad was a mechanical genius. And they would pop in with their cars. Buck would say, "Oh, I just got this truck from my son. I think there's a problem with the carburetor." And my dad would say, "Oh, Buck, let me just look at it." And then as he wiped his hands, he'd say, "You don't owe me anything." Or if a woman pulled in to get some gas, and we're going back to the bays where the bell would ring and my brothers would come out and wash the window and pump the gas. It was a lovely thing. My dad would walk out and go, "You know, I heard some pinging in that engine." And he'd look in and see all these kids in the back of the station wagon. And so he'd tinker around a little bit and say, "You know, here's your problem and I can cut you a deal," or, "Hey, I fixed it already for you. It's done. It was just a small thing. You needed some more oil," or whatever it was. And he'd look at those kids again and say, "You know, you can pay me when you can." The thing is, those kind of cans don't feed a family of six. And so money was tight. I called my mom one day when I was coming home from Tennessee. I said, "Mom, were we kind of poor?" And she goes, "No, because we had enough. I lived my whole life until my mid-30s without realizing that we did not have a lot because we had enough." And so what that meant was that we didn't get stuff. My mom never got us anything at the store. She made a list throughout the week when she went to the store, and she never strayed from that list. She had a very tight budget. One time, I took the little pencil and I wrote Ovaltine in between two different items, thinking maybe just because all of us kids are with her, she's in a hurry, she'll just accidentally grab it. When you are so desperate for sweets that you want like a cardboard tasting chocolate drink, that is a sign of where you're at as a child in your home, right? I'd be like, Mom, I pull on her dress, Mom, please, can I please just have a quarter to buy a small pack of Black Jack gum? And she'd go, "No, you're not going to get any money for candy." And I'd be like, Mom. You know, patience is what parents have when people are looking. She'd take a hold and she'd say, "Girl, I would kill you if I had the money to bury you." And don't think bad of her, because I pushed that woman like a pinball machine all the time. So we never got anything except at Christmas and at birthday. That was it. Well, a birthday was coming up for me, and I knew what I wanted. I wanted a potholder maker, and I got it. It was a red metal square, and it came with a long silver hook and then a bag of the ugliest colored loops you ever saw in your life. They were like green, white, black, yellow, red. No one had a kitchen those colors, and if they did, intervention was necessary. But I loved it. And every Saturday morning, the rule was the first kid out of bed got to pick the cartoons for the day. So I was always the first one up. I mean, even now, though I move a little slower, my brain is always on fire. I'd be the first kid up, and I would open the closet door really quiet because I shared a bedroom, and I would get my potholder maker in the loops, and I would go downstairs and turn on the TV and turn it to the channel that had Johnny Quest and Tom and Jerry and the Bugs Bunny. Oh, man, back when it was violent but just cuter than it is now. And I would sit cross-legged on the couch, and I would put the loops to my right and the loom on my lap, and I could take and pull. I got to the point where I could just pull those loops right across that loom without even looking at it. And then I would drop my hook in, and I could weave, and I'd hook up a loop, and I'd pull. And I truly could do it all without looking. I had made so many pot holders. And then when I was done, I would take, and you would braid the edge. And as you rounded second, third base on that loom, you had to move really quick because they'd start to pop up and you were going to lose it, right? And when you were done, you pulled that last loop and you had a pot holder. It was fascinating. I mean, how have times changed that we as children thought making pot holders was the best thing ever? And I remember one Saturday morning, I woke up and I went to the closet and I was the first one up. I listen, nobody's moving. I don't hear the TV downstairs. So I opened the closet door and I saw on the floor all kinds of pot holders that had been building up. I had given my mom so many, she couldn't shut her drawer. I'd given my grandma so many, and she had bought all these little magnetic hooks and put them on her fridge. So her whole fridge was covered in pot holders. It looked like a quilted refrigerator. She thought it was beautiful. So did I. And I stood there for a minute, and I'm like, why do you keep making these pot holders when you have so many? And then I remembered I heard something my mom tell my dad at breakfast. She said, Spike, with that new gas station, you need to have a marketing plan of how you're going to get customers. And then I thought, you know what? I can do this. You know, my dad had become an entrepreneur. I'd learned that word and I thought, I'm going to sell these pot holders. So I got my clothing, got those pot holders, went to the bathroom and quietly dressed. And then I went downstairs into the garage and shoved all of those pot holders into my basket. And I set out into the neighborhood. And I thought this should be relatively easy because I was surrounded by relatives. They're going to buy from me. And so I went to the first house, and it was my Aunt Joanne. I knocked on the door. She came to the door, still a little sleepy in her PJs. And she said, Kimmy, what are you doing? And I said, I'm selling pot holders. I had two in my hand. And she goes, what? I said, I'm selling pot holders. I said, I'm selling them for money. I said, 50 cents a piece. And she goes, why are you selling them? And I said, what do you mean? And she said, what's the money going to go towards? I said, me? And she said, I don't need any, and shut the door. I went back to my bike and put them in, and I'm like, well, okay, well, that didn't go like I expected. So I went to the next house. It was Terry and Chuck, my aunt and uncle. I knocked on the door, and they opened the door, and they were standing there together, and they're like, what are you doing? I said, I'm selling pot holders. And they said, what? I said, I'm selling pot holders. They said, did you make them for Pioneer Girls? We were too poor for Girl Scouts. They said, did you make them for Pioneer Girls? And I said, no. I said, I made them myself. I got a pot holder maker for my birthday. And I said, I have a whole bunch. I'm selling them for 50 cents a piece. And they said, well, what are you going to do with the money? They said, what are you saving for? I said, nothing. I said, I just want money. I never have money. My mom takes all the checks out of the birthday card. She says she's putting a savings account. I don't think she is. And they said, Kimmy, we don't really need any pot holders. And they shut the door. Well, that went on for two more houses. And I got on my bike, still my basket packed with pot holders. And I thought, what am I going to do? And as I rode around where we lived, very rural, all these houses were a little spread out, I thought to myself, you know, the problem is you don't have a marketing plan. You don't have a strategy. And I remembered the conversation I heard at the breakfast table with my mom and my dad. And I thought, I just need to come up with a plan. So I rode around for a while, and I created the perfect marketing plan. First, I told myself, get out of the neighborhood where they know you. So I went up Farm Drive Hill, turned right onto Locust Grove Road, took that corner, took that hill down that dipped deep. Oh, I love it when the bike vibrates and your hair is flowing. I made a left into that little tiny community. And I went to the first house that seemed welcoming. They had over 100 salt and pepper shakers collected in their front windows. They had pink flamingos, plastic squirrels riveted into rocks, and cement saints in the back. And I thought to myself, this is a very well-rounded human being. I pulled out two pot holders and I went up to the door and I knocked. And a lovely lady answered the door and she was wiping her hands on a little tea towel and she said, well, hello there. She said, what can I do for you? And I said, well, my name's Kimmy. And I said, I'm from down the road. And I said, I made pot holders and I'm selling them for 50 cents a piece. And she said, oh, let me see. And she examined my work and she said, these are lovely. She said, what are you going to do with the money?
I was ready.
I said, well, I said, my mother's very sick. And I said, I just want money to buy her flowers. She said, you wait right here. She went into her house, came back with $1.25, a dollar bill and a quarter. She handed it to me and said, you are so sweet. And I said, oh, thank you. She said, I hope your mother feels better soon. I said, oh, so do I. We all do. I went to my basket, twisted that dollar and put it on the inside weave of that basket and dropped the quarter into the bottom. I went to the next house. I knocked. I had four potholders because I saw how well my marketing had worked. The lady came to the door and she said, what can I do for you? And I said, I made these potholders myself and I'm selling them. I said, 50 cents a piece. She said, why are you selling them? I said, my mother. She said, oh, she said, that's precious. She's like, Hank, come out here. Hank came out. He dug in his pocket. He gave me every bit of change that he had in his pocket. They took those four potholders. I dropped the change into my basket. By the fifth house, I had sold every potholder. And my mother had an unexplainable rash all over her body. I went home and I parked the bike. I took the money out, shoved it in my jean pockets, took the dollars, hid them up under my shirt, held it tight so they wouldn't fall out. I went through the basement garage door, up the stairs, through that room where we always played, through the hall, past the kitchen as fast as I could. Everybody was up and busy and eating. My mom was cooking. I went into the bedroom, shut the door and locked it. My sister was not in there. And I spread that money out before me. I smelled my sweaty coin hands. I had never had so much money in my life. I counted it twice, took all the coins and put them between my mattress and my box spring. And then I took the dollar bills and put them underneath my pillow and tucked the end in so that my sister wouldn't get nosy. I opened the door, went down, and I ate my breakfast. And then I thought, I'm going to take a little time to read. I was feeling pretty leisurely that day. Had a hard day's work that morning. I slid down between the beds. There was a little bookcase, and I pulled out the Brothers Grimm book from Reader's Digest that I love to this day. And I was just reading and minding my business when I heard, Kimberly, come down here. It was my mother. Don't get ahead of me, lady. I went down into the den. The magical place where the paneling in the den matched the paneling on the Oldsmobile station wagon. And what I saw there was very interesting. My mom was not in her rocking chair. She was sitting in my dad's chair. And in the rocking chair and on the couch were some ladies that looked vaguely familiar. And my mother said, Kimmy. I looked at her. I had been staring at the little piles of potholders in these women's laps. She said, these women who go to our church, told me that you were up in Locust Grove selling potholders. Is that true? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, well, they told me that you told them that you needed to sell them to get money to buy flowers. Is that true? And I said, yes, ma'am. And then she talked real slow, like I had lost all intelligence. She said, why would you tell them I was sick? Why would you do that? I looked down at my feet and I thought, this answer will determine the rest of my life. And so I leaned upon the wisdom of my father and what he would do when my mom talked to him like that. I looked at her and I said, I don't know. And she said, girl, I know you hid that money somewhere. You go to your bedroom and you get it and you bring it back here now. I was walking down the hallway and I thought, man, I got to give all that money back. And then I thought, oh, she's going to have enough money to bury me. I went to my bedroom and put the coinage on top of the bed, pulled out the dollar bills, and I scooped it up into my hands and cradled it. It's very interesting because, you know, not much time had passed before I had just been feeling so high on the fact that I had all that money, and now here I stood holding it not much later, and it felt very dirty. And that is when I realized what it felt like to be a politician. I took the money down, and my mom made me give the ladies each their money back. She made me apologize. We told them they could keep the pot holders. They handed them back to me with lips pressed firm, shaking their head. No, you know, false advertising. So there I stood with a handful of pot holders. And my mom said, "Are there more?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "Put those in your bedroom and meet me down in the car." I went down to the car with the remaining money, and we drove into Locust Grove. She made me point out the houses where I felt the rest of the people lived because, man, I didn't even know those ladies went to our church. It's like, I hope I get it right, and I did. And when we were all done and all the money was gone and I had another lap full of pot holders because nobody wanted them, I thought, you know, just take your punishment. My mom was consistent and fair. And so you just took your punishment. And so I sat there staring at that Oldsmobile logo on the glove box, trying not to make any kind of face that could be misinterpreted as disrespect. And I waited. My mom was not one of those moms who said, "Wait till your father comes home." My friend Kim Snyder, who lived on the other side of the house, that's what her mom always did. And it was awesome because by the time her dad got home, he was tired. She had fizzled down. She never got in trouble. My mom executed immediately. She was judge, jury, and executioner, and she whistled while she did it. She had no problem taking control of the disciplinary behavior in the house. And so I thought, here it comes. And the whole way home, I kept waiting. Nothing. We pulled into the driveway, and she turned the car off and dropped the keys in her lap, and I was like, here it comes. Nothing. Finally, I looked over at her, and she looked at me, and she said, "Kimmy, this goes against everything your father believes in. Honest, hardworking, giving. You know, usually I handle these things, but I think this time, your daddy needs to handle it." My dad's name is Spike. And I am not stressed. That is truth. And I was like, no way, not dad. My dad was a big guy with large hands, grease under the fingernails, nicks and cuts from working in engines. He was a tough guy. And I thought, I do not want to deal with him. And as I went into the house, I was walking behind my mom. And when we went through the kitchen, there were casseroles on the counter from women in the neighborhood who'd heard my mom was dying. Hope welled up in me, and I thought, free food. She's not going to have to cook for 4 days. And I said, "Mom, see? Look, you're not going to have to cook." And she said, "Go to your room." So I went to my room, shut the door, and I sat on the bed. And I had to wait for my father to come home. Now, when I sat there, I did some serious thinking. You may think that I was nervous because of a physical punishment or a groundation. That is not even the issue. I was nervous and upset because I loved my dad. There's two kinds of parenting. Put the fear in them, and when you're gone, they're going to do what they want. Or make them love you so much and respect you that you don't want to break their heart. And that's what I knew I was going to do. I knew that I was going to break my dad's heart, and I was just dreading it. Ticking off my mom, I did that every day. That was no big deal. But not my dad. I heard the car pull in. I heard him shut the door to the basement as he walked into the house. I heard low murmuring and mumbling as my mom said, "You know what your daughter did today?" And then the handle on the door turned and my dad walked in. I didn't even have to look up. The smell of grease and Old Spice preceded him everywhere he went. I kept my head down as he sat on top of my bed, and I went down at least an inch with the weight of him. His hands rested on his knees. He was wearing that deep, dark teal blue mechanics pants and shirt tucked in, buttoned up with the white and red oval that said Spike. And I waited. Nothing. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore, and I looked up at him, and he was looking at me. And in his eyes, for the first and last time in my life, I saw the twinkle of disappointment and amusement in the same place. And he said, "Kimmy, your mother told me what you did today." I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Honey, if you can't sell it honestly, then it's not worth selling." And he leaned forward, kissed me on the forehead, and left. I thought, well, he's going to come back, I'm sure. He did not. I was not called to dinner, so I didn't eat. For the next few days, my mom and dad didn't look at me or talk to me. I think they learned that on Wild Kingdom, sponsored by Mutual of Omaha. When one of the herd misbehaves, create a circle and keep them out till they learn their lesson and they can re-entry the herd. I mean, they just wouldn't look at me. They wouldn't talk to me. It was the worst thing in the world. I'm a talker. Talk, 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 talk. They wouldn't respond. They wouldn't look at me. Nothing. Nothing at all. That went on for a week. And then they came back to life and they welcomed me back. And that was my punishment. And did it stick? There is not one thing that I will put my hand to or my name on that I am not 100% sure about. A lesson pushed deep into me by the silent wisdom of my family. Now, I'm still selling those pint holders. I brought some with me. They're $4.50. My dog needs surgery.
Kim Whitecamp with her story, Pot Holders. Now, listening to this story reminds me of all the things we used to try and sell in the neighborhood when we were kids. Childhood desires, as it turns out, sometimes get out ahead of childhood resources. And, well, sometimes we wanted more penny candy and bottles of frosty root beer than our meager allowances could accommodate. We were pretty dedicated lemonade stand proprietors on hot summer afternoons, but we tried a lot more than that. We went across the street and asked Luana Smith, everyone in the neighborhood called her Grandma Smith, if we could pick a few of the flowers that so beautifully covered her property, and then we'd try and sell the picked flowers to our neighbors. Once, we found a bunch of interesting-looking rocks and got out our box of magic markers and drew faces on the rocks and then put a rock in each of the spaces in an empty egg carton, and then we tried to sell the rocks. Once, we asked a guy in the neighborhood if we could clean up a bunch of sheets of corrugated metal on his property. We'd do it for free, we said. Our real plan was to take them to the recyclers and get some cash for them. We weren't too discriminating about the types of metal we might take to get recycled. The recycler, as it turns out, was. As you can imagine, there was mixed interest in our money-making ventures. Grandma Smith's flowers didn't sell so well, especially after sitting out in the hot sun for a couple of blocks. And an egg carton full of decorated rocks? Not many bites, as you can imagine. But were we learning things? Like crazy, we learned to work with other people on projects. We had to plan and conference and talk confidently to adults and even do math to figure out things like overhead and profits and losses. And, well, maybe those things don't seem like a big deal now, but it's partly because we taught it to ourselves then. As it turns out, we begin to make our grown-up lives long before we ever get there. Also, it should be said, there was a certain year when my mom got, for her birthday, a rock decorated with a face in magic marker. In fact, she got two, one from me and one from my brother. Well, that's where Kim's story took me. Where did the story take you? And who will you take along? I want to introduce you to another show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Lisa Show, and it's hosted by comedian, believer, actress, single mother, Lisa Valentine Clark. The Lisa Show delves into the multitude of challenges and relationships that shape our lives, whether it's parenting, mental health questions, social issues. She and her council of moms will tackle it. She'll help you figure out this thing called life. With a lot of laughs along the way, Lisa is a great person to hang around with. The Lisa Show. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of places to listen to The Lisa Show whenever you like. The Lisa Show from BYU Radio. It's a pleasure to share with you another great story from another great teller on the Appleseed today. Tim Lowry creates all kinds of zany characters in his stories, like in this story, The Wide Mouth Frog. It's another tale about learning lessons while you're young that can serve you later on if you can manage to survive them. This is a story you may know, a lot of people do, and Tim's take on it is a kick. Here's Tim Lowry with The Wide Mouth Frog.
Once upon a time, there was a wide mouth frog. And the wide mouth frog sat up on a lily pad, ate flies all day. He'd never been to school, not even kindergarten. He didn't know very much. One day, he decided to hop off of his lily pad and hop into the water and swim over to the bank. And he'd climb up on the big dirt road and hop around the world and see what he could see. So away he went, hopped and plopped and hopped and plopped and hopped and plopped till he stopped. Right there on the side of the road, behind a barbed wire fence, was the strangest thing he'd ever seen. It had four big legs, black and white blotches all over it, two big horns poking out the front, big long tail hanging off the back, and when he spoke to it, it said, "Mmm." "Good morning, Mrs. Cow," said the wide mouth frog. The cow said good morning. He'd never talked to a real-life cow before, so he decided to ask her a question. "What do you feed your babies?" Cow thought for a minute, and then she said, "Well, I feed my babies milk." "Oh, that's nice," said the wide mouth frog. "Thank you very much." And he hopped away. Hopped and plopped, and hopped, and plopped, and hopped, and plopped, till he stopped. Right there on the other side of the road behind a split rail fence was another strange-looking thing. It had four legs, but it wasn't a cow. Short brown hair all over it, long hair hanging down its neck, and a ponytail drooping off the back. "Good morning, Mrs. Horse. I am the wide mouth frog," the horse said good morning. He'd never talked to a real-life horse either. Had to ask her the same question. "What do you feed your babies?" Horse thought for a second, and she said, "Well, I feed my babies hay." "Oh, that's nice," said the wide mouth frog. "Thank you very much." And he hopped away. Hopped and plopped and hopped and plopped and hopped and plopped till he stopped. Right there in the middle of the road, there was a bump, with a head and two legs sticking out the front of the bump, and a tail and two legs sticking out the back of the bump, and it moved very, very slow. "Good morning, Mrs. Turtle. I am the wide mouth frog," the turtle said good morning. He'd never stopped long enough to talk to a turtle. Perfect time to ask his question. "What do you feed your babies?" Turtle thought for a minute. Actually, turtles are kind of slow, so she thought for 2 minutes. And finally, she said, "Well, I feed my babies worms." "Ew." "Oh, that's nice," said the wide mouth frog. "Thank you very much." And he hopped away. Hopped and plopped and hopped and plopped and hopped and plopped till he stopped. He stopped at the river. And laying on the riverbank was this big, long, green, humpity-bumpity thing. It had four short, stubby legs, long, pointy tail, and hundreds of snaggle-aggly teeth. "Good morning, Mrs. Alligator. I am the wide mouth frog," the alligator said good morning. He'd never stopped to talk to a real-life gator, had to ask his question, "What do you feed your babies?" The alligator smiled a big, toothy grin, and she said, "I feed my babies wide mouth frogs."
"Oh, that's nice. Thank you very much."
And that was the end of that.
That was Tim Lowry with The Wide Mouth Frog. Has your curiosity ever landed you in hot water? Did you ever make a childhood mistake that taught you an important lesson? Do you ever try to sell stuff to your neighbors? I bet there are stories there. We want to thank Kim Whitecamp and Tim Lowry for sharing with us on the Appleseed today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, and Brian Tanner. Our audio engineers are Ashton Parkinson and DJ Cromarty. The rest of the Appleseed team, Kira Van Dam, Kelly Wormeister, Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. Hey, if you like today's podcast, subscribe, rate us, leave us a review, and tell your friends. That's how the podcast grows. We also love to receive emails. Email us at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. Your thoughts and comments help us shape the future of the Appleseed. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.